coalition forces and begin striking selected targets of military importance.
It would be a decision which could only be taken once.
There's no argument over the choice between peace and war.
Unconfirmed reports about Gaddafi being captured.
This morning, I want to talk about the future of Europe.
Burning Point.
Hello and welcome to the show. With me, Ekaterina Kudoshkina. As India celebrates its 68th Independence Day on the 15th of August, most observers tend to focus on its economic progress. As of now, the country is ranked the world's 10th largest by nominal GDP and the third largest by purchasing power parity. This fiscal year, the economy is expected to grow at 5.2-5.7%, and according to UN 2013 figures, the foreign direct investment into India grew by 17% to $28 billion. Little wonder that now all eyes are on India, trying to guess what direction the new Indian government of Prime Minister Narendra Modi has chosen for the country. The US top officials have made a special point of coming over to New Delhi over the past month, with the US Secretary of State John Kerry visiting India at the end of July, closely followed by the US Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. Now, with more details on the prospects of Indian-American relations, here is Dr. Harinder Sekhon, independent expert in India-US relations, based in New Delhi.
Chuck Hagel's visit was a part of the U.S.-India strategic dialogue, which has been an ongoing dialogue now for a number of years. Chuck Hagel came following Secretary Kerry's visit to India. And Secretary Kerry, you know, ever since Modi has become the Prime Minister, India has been getting the impression that we are getting wooed by the United States, because there is a great deal of concern. And, you know, considering that the relations had really started faltering and had somewhat plateaued during the last few months of the earlier government in India, you know, when we had the UPA government, the Manmohan Singh government. And the lowest point in U.S.-India relations was reached in December last year, you know, the famous Devyani Khobragade, when the Indian diplomat was arrested and strip-searched in New York. And her domestic help, the family was flown out of India. I mean, they were Indian citizens, and they were flown out of India using the American taxpayers' money, which had caused, you know, rightly so, it had caused a great deal of anger and resentment amongst the Indian government and the Indian establishment and the Indian people. And it was, we were getting the feeling that, you know, the U.S. thought that they could dictate certain terms to us. But with the coming of Modi, I think they are taking us a little more seriously, more so especially the manner in which Modi had been treated since 2005. He'd been denied a visa. And it is the Americans who started seeking him out, you know, when it became apparent that there was some kind of a BJP wave in India. There would be a change of government over here. And from the Indian side, from the BJP side and the NDA government, there was nothing of the sort that please give the Prime Minister a visa. So it is President Obama who called him up, and they're the ones who've been seeking, you know, better relations with India. And of course, you know, we are very pragmatic people, and we would like to have good relations with every country. And, you know, we've got a very nice traditional thing with the erstwhile USSR, and it's continued with Russia. With China, we are trying to, you know, India does not want to be used as a bulwark against any country. And we would like to kind of keep our options open and have equally good relations within our neighborhood. So that extends to East Asia, China, Russia, and of course the United States.
Just to remind you, our guest speaker is Dr. Harinder Sekhon, independent expert in India-U.S. relations.
Burning Point.
But coming more specifically to the U.S.-India strategic dialogue and Kerry's visit, and, you know, like earlier, we were getting the feeling that America is only paying lip sympathy and saying that India is the most important partner for the 21st century. But America was really talking very big without putting anything on the ground. And now I think they realize that this is a very serious government. And I was in Washington in June and spoke at the Council on Foreign Relations and made it very clear that Modi is very pragmatic. He is not going to anything to upset America. the United States or to break off or make things difficult or create any hurdles in U.S.-India relations. But at the same time, he would ask for specific deliverables from the United States to move U.S.-India relations forward. So it is not going to be, you know, some high-sounding phrases and India is going to be pacified or feel happy about it. So when we are talking about defense modernization and defense, you know, sales of weapons to India, there would have to be definite deliverables on a case-by-case basis, and the transfer of technology and a joint co-development platform is what India is seeking. And that is why, you know, I attended the talk by Chuck Hagel, the only public event he had in India. I attended that. And he has actually stated that we are looking at defense trade and technology issues. So the DTTI in U.S.-India relations, you know, in defense relations, is something which is going to get a lot of attention from the Americans. He came with a very big delegation of defense personnel and technical experts and all. But India, you know, is going to sign because we have very critical shortages in our armed forces, and we are definitely going to look at all of those things. And now, you know, the other thing, earlier when Secretary Kerry came, that was also the time he tried to exert pressure on India to agree to the WTO negotiations. So while we were speaking, while Secretary Kerry was here, the Indian government did not succumb to any pressure. And we said that we would not sign the WTO negotiations, which were underway earlier this month, until and unless our concerns about food security were addressed. And we are very critical, you know, because ours being an agricultural-based economy, we feel that the WTO, with its insistence on that you can only keep 10% of your food grain production in reserve, is not enough, because we have all kinds of natural calamities like famines and stuff like that. And we are still a developing country. We have to rush food supplies in an emergency. We have, you know, like over 700, 650 million people living in the rural areas. So they have to be first given food. And this is one of the important manifestos of the new government, to revive the economy. And if you do not reach out to the most marginalized sections of Indian society and bring them up in the economic development index, in the economic development scale, you know, you're going to be voted out of power the next time. And in a democracy, you have to, because, I mean, as has happened now, the anti-incumbency factor was so strong that the Congress got voted out of power. And here is a government which has come that, you know, on the promise of reviving the economy, creating jobs, reviving the economic growth rate. So, you know, these things become very critical. I mean, though we realize that we have to carry on with the global regime, we are part of a globalized world, but at the same time, that kind of, you know, globalization and our multinational and multidimensional foreign policy cannot be at the cost of our domestic constraints and domestic compulsions.
Dr. Sekhon, thank you so much. And just to remind you, our guest speaker was Dr. Harinder Sekhon, independent expert in India-U.S. relations. This is Burning Point. We're discussing the future economic policy of the new Indian government of Narendra Modi. Now, India's economy is going to exceed that of the U.S. by the middle of this century. This is a forecast made by Nguyen Xuan Tan, president of the Vietnam Academy of Social Sciences. Well, Commerce Secretary Rajiv Kher has said that India should focus on increasing its trade with Latin America, Africa, and the BRICS nations, noting that India had not explored to the fullest potential trade prospects with BRICS nations, especially Russia and China. And now we are joined by our next guest speaker, Dr. Nandan Unnikrishnan, Vice President and Senior Fellow of the Observer Research Foundation in New Delhi, India.
India definitely has tremendous potential and is likely in the next 20-25 years to emerge as one of the leading economies in the world. There is little doubt about that. Also that given that kind of trajectory, that there is tremendous potential and scope for improvement of economic ties with the BRICS countries, particularly Russia and China, would also be true.
Do you think we could expand on the opportunities in the India-Russia economic relationship? Because we know we have been underperforming these years. So what is the new government's vision on that?
I don't think there will be much difference in terms of approach between the old government and the new government in terms of the relationship and development of economic ties with Russia. If at all there will be any difference, it will be that the new government will probably bring in a little bit more energy into developing these ties. The areas of development are clear to all of us. And if I was to elaborate on them, I would say one of the most promising areas is developing some kind of relationship between India and the Eurasian Union, which has recently come into being with the treaty between Belarus, Russia and Kazakhstan. India is negotiating a kind of an understanding with the three countries and is likely to come up with some kind of a treaty shortly. That would be of great benefit because then India would be able to access the markets of these three countries with a single tariff and be able to send its product. The other area, which is purely at the bilateral level between Russia and India, I think we must look at new solutions to developing our military industrial relationship, military technical cooperation, in other words. And there is a lot of scope for us to develop non-traditional, I would say, cooperation in areas like pharmaceuticals, high technology, information technology. These are all areas in which the potential is tremendous. And I think both sides agree that we need to find ways to remove some of the bottlenecks of red tape and bureaucratic delays that is stopping development here. The other area which has tremendous scope and is potentially a win-win for everyone is somehow energizing the relationship in providing each other energy security. You know, India is an energy-hungry country. Russia has tremendous supplies of hydrocarbons, and the ability to supply each other's energy security would go a long way in cementing the relationship.
There's also been some rumors about perhaps moving from dollar in our bilateral trade to our national currencies, ruble and rupee.
Yes, I understand is something that the BRICS are discussing in any case, and pretty substantial movement in terms of that happening between Russia and China. And I think the scope of extending some of it to the Indo-Russian trade is also quite practical.
And recent days saw a lot of activity on the part of the U.S. I mean, there was John Kerry's visit, there was the visit by Chuck Hagel, and both were saying very nice words about India.
Well, you know, your ambassador in India, Mr. Kadakin, once put it in a very colorful manner. He said that India is this bride who is being wooed by many suitors. And amongst those suitors is also the United States. And therefore, the United States would say a lot of nice things, as all the other suitors would, because they're waiting for the wedding to be consummated, as it were. But I don't think India has decided on the wedding yet. So it's going to take some more time. And I don't think India is going to be taking decision on the basis of sweet words alone.
Sir, thank you so much. And just to remind you, this time our guest speaker was Dr. Nandan Unnikrishnan, Vice President and Senior Fellow of the Observer Research Foundation in New Delhi, India. Well, and now we end this edition of Burning Point, brought to you by me, Yekaterina Kudashkina. Thank you so much for staying with us. Goodbye, and take care.